You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
All right, everybody, you are listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, and today I am joined by Phil Mead, one of the crew from the Shuttle Tidarium. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. I'm technically the co-pilot. We have crew, but they're mostly Ewoks, so, you know.
Yeah, I hear a lot of them die. A lot.
They go to a better place.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the Gold Squadron hangar. Is the Shuttle Tidarium, is this a stolen shuttle? Are you literally
an Imperial? What?
So I let you into a Rebel hangar?
This is legitimate salvage.
Oh, legitimate salvage. Got it. All right, Phil. So, you messaged me a couple weeks ago, and we wanted to hook up here and talk about the awesome narrative that you guys are putting on for Gen Con. So now a lot of people, of course, know that at Gen Con, you have the North American Championships happening, and, for the more competitive players. But there's definitely people who love to play X-Wing who maybe are looking for something different. And I'm going to hand the mic over to you.
Thanks. Our mission statement at the Shuttle Tidarium podcast is to focus on the aspects of gameplay that are not directly associated with tournament play. So that's, that encompasses all sorts of different ways to play the game. You have more like goofy ways like Mario Kart, which we're also running several Mario Kart events at Gen Con. You can also find those. Mario Kart is just like a basic, it's like a little fun racing version of X-Wing. So we talk about that some. We also look at some of the cool fan-made material out there, like the Heroes of Atari Cluster campaign.
Love it.
We have a ton of episodes looking into that in detail and talking about it. Such a great system. A ton of work went into that. You can really tell. So we look at things like that. I look at a lot of the missions that Fantasy Flight has put out with their expansions. You may have noticed these. Most people throw away those little pamphlets.
I have all of mine, and I've actually played them.
Wow. Yeah. That is, you're one of the few. I've thrown out about half before I started paying attention. So those are, those missions are kind of a mixed bag. You might have a good idea of how those go, having played maybe more than I have. I haven't played all of the missions yet. How was your experience with them?
Most of them are okay. My wife and I, she's not a huge competitive gamer. And it's just been a fun way. It's like, all right, I really would like to practice playing X-Wing. And really, when it comes down to it, maneuvering is the biggest part, right? So it's like, all right, how can I practice X-Wing and also spend time with my wife? Hey, honey, let's do a mission, And we're able to, we go in the game room and stuff and set the things up. And, there's an objective and certain places you have to go on the board. So I'm getting my practice in, and as well as just, having fun.
That sounds like a great way to do those missions. A lot of times I hear about people, like playing father and son games with these missions. The Fantasy Flight missions work very, very well if you approach them with a very casual attitude. I have a very rigorous approach to missions, personally. I've been writing missions for X-Wing for quite a long time now, ever since Mission Control came out. Do you know Mission Control?
Yeah, actually. So I've been listening to you guys' podcast since day one. Since episode one, I've listened to most of them, and I found out about it when you were talking about it on, I think it was like episode one, where you mentioned it. And I was like, oh, I didn't know this thing existed, and saw all the really cool things that people were contributing to the community.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know about it. It's a mission building tool, web tool that Fantasy Flight put out. I think around Wave 5, maybe even pre-Wave 5. And it's a cool little, mission building thing. You can give a little mission briefing. There's a little map that you can populate with areas, blue and red areas, and little ship and ships and like other little tokens. And you can build a little mission for yourself, and then you can post it online, and people can see it. They can see it, and they can rate them. It is, unfortunately, it has not been supported for about a year and a half. So it is missing like all of the ships past wave six. It doesn't have anything.
Probably so. Just got to write that in the notes on the in the margins or something.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully one day FFG will start paying attention to that a little bit. You know, one can hope. Mostly these days I'm mostly using Vassal to create mission images for my mission briefings, and just using like PowerPoint to write missions because it's just easier at this point.
Well, maybe with your guys, you know, push here with doing these events at something as big a scale as Gen Con, say, hey, look at the draw that this casual X-Wing side has brought out, you know, let's support that.
Yeah. One of the exciting things about this Gen Con narrative event is that it gives me a chance to really present a very interesting package of my favorite kind of missions, which is thematic scenarios. So these are missions that try really hard to feel like they would really happen in the Star Wars universe. So I like to see missions on like and scenarios on a spectrum from goofy stuff on one end, like Mario Kart, to like, you know, air quote historical simulations. Like, do you know Dagobah Dave's Trench Run scenario?
Yes, I have not had an opportunity to play it, but yeah, I've heard about it.
Yeah, so it recreates the trench run on the first Death Star, and you know, you have like little squads that you can historically recreate the trench run. It's a pretty cool little mission.
Yeah, and I've seen people like create like tables with like the trench in it, like a 3D scale. I've seen a bunch of different maps for it. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, and games like that, they can be really really fun because if you think back to when you first got into X-Wing, what drew you to the game in the first place?
Star Wars. It's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I had never played any type of competitive game of any kind. A buddy was like, hey, because he was into like Warhammer and 40K and all this other stuff, and he's like, oh, look at this new game, X-Wing. I was like, oh, I like Star Wars, and I just went from there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people came to X-Wing in a very similar way, whether they had played miniatures games or not before. I think that if this game had not had a Star Wars skin, like if we just called them like Skyflyers or something else, and everything else was mechanically the same, but just had different names, there's a real good chance that this game would never have gone past Wave 2, I think. That people just may not have even picked it up.
Absolutely. I know that, if I'm not mistaken, Fantasy Flight did have a game, I think it was called like Wings of War. I could be wrong about that. Sorry, person on the internet who's listening to us. But they had something similar where it was like fighter planes, you know, simulating dogfights in the air. And I had never heard of it until I got into X-Wing. And then somebody was like, oh, by the way, this system came from this, you know, yeah. Which I don't think as anywhere close to the number of people played that game as now.
Certainly not. I mean, I think X-Wing is, I mean, it's up there with the most popular miniatures games, period, right? I mean,
absolutely.
I think it's close to Warhammer right now, if not exceeding.
Like, I believe there were some stats that came out earlier last year that it had, I'm not sure if it was sales or something. So there was some metric that they were using that it did surpass 40K.
Yeah, that's really amazing. So we, and I specifically, like to make the game feel like Star Wars through these scenarios. And there's a few different ways you can do that. And I'm trying to bring all those to bear in the narrative event. So I think I can start talking about the narrative event now. So we've been working on this event probably since November last year. So there's a ton of effort going into this thing. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking back then. I don't think I realized how much work I would be putting into this. But I think that it's coming out really, really great. And the event is based on a original narrative that I actually ended up cooking up, and I've been releasing short, I guess you would call them audio dramas, through the Shuttle Tidarian podcast, laying out the backstory, introducing you to the characters that are involved, and the places, specifically setting up the situation that you find yourself in at the beginning of the narrative. And the situation is basically there is a hidden rebel base that the Imperials know about, they have some information on, and throughout the narrative, the Imperials are trying to get more and more information about the location of the rebel base. The rebels are trying to slow them down and buy themselves more time to, you know, hold on to the base and delay the Imperials from attacking it. And whether or not the, you know, no matter who's ahead in the narrative in terms of victories and score, either way, the narrative ends up at a final climactic battle around the hidden rebel base, which is called Grayskull Base, which is what the narrative is named for. It's named Assault on Grayskull Base. So there's basically two ways that that climactic battle can shape up. If the Imperials are ahead, then what happens is the Imperials launch their attack before the rebels are ready for it. The rebels don't know it's coming, and they're taken by surprise, and they have to evacuate Grayskull. And basically, the rebel mission during that final scenario is basically like the Battle of Hoth. They're trying to buy time and protect the transports as they evacuate. And if the rebels are ahead, then the tables are kind of turned on the Imperials. What actually happens is the rebels feed the Imperials false information, and basically they know when and where the Imperials are going to attack, and they kind of lay a trap for the Imperials. But the Imperials end up bringing more ships than the rebels anticipate, so it ends up being a fair fight, but the...
Right.
The rebels kind of have a strong positional advantage, but a numerical disadvantage in that final mission. So, you know, it's a balanced mission.
Yeah, of course. You know, I really like... So it sounds like, if I'm not mistaken, that there are going to be maybe one or two missions before the final battle, or multiple missions before the final battle.
Yeah.
How many of them are going to be?
So there's four rounds of missions. We're starting pretty early in the day to get all these in. The first three rounds of missions each have two alternate versions that each player is going to be assigned one of those randomly. And we're releasing all the rules for these ahead of time so people can look at these scenarios and think about how they should be building their squads. So, you know, during the first round, there's two missions. There's Terror Campaign, which is a mission where the Imperials are bombing a city into submission, and the rebels are trying to protect the city and buy enough time for the civilians to evacuate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also Communications Net, where the Imperials and the rebels are fighting over control of a bunch of satellites whose security has been disabled, and the rebels and the Imperials can sort of slice into or or hack into these satellites and take control of them. They're trying to like intercept a coded transmission that each side wants to receive.
Very cool.
So each player at the start of round one gets assigned one of those two missions. And the reason that we do that is to give people a unique experience, even within the event. You can talk about, you can talk to different people about what kind of missions you played. You can even replay the narrative and have a completely different experience. But more importantly to me is allowing players to look at and read ahead on these missions and sort of familiarize themselves with it, with those rules, but at the same time protect against players building exploitative squads for specific missions. So it's hard to fully exploit a mission, even if, you know, and of course I'm taking as...
Because in the end, you don't know which one you're going to get.
Exactly. That said, you have a squadron roster for this event, which you can spend 250 points on. So you're going to have, you know, you're going to have some flexibility in building your squad, but it's only going to be, you know, you could probably only field two completely different squads out of that.
Okay, so 200, I got 250 points to spend, you said?
Mm-hmm.
What other restrictions are there?
So
if I was a rebel.
So if you're a rebel or any player, really, the restrictions are that you can only populate your squadron roster with non-unique cards. So, you know, you can put you can fill it up with rookie pilot X-wing pilots or red squadron pilots, green squadron, blue squadron, whatever. But you can't put like Luke Skywalker in that squadron, and you can't put Wedge in that squadron, not yet anyway. Because as part of keeping the event thematic and also working to shake up the sort of the meta, any sort of metagame squads and prevent people from building the standard combos that have in many ways driven the competitive X-Wing metagame, we're making unique named uniques unique across the event. So what that means is there's only one Wedge Antilles in the entire narrative event.
Is there something you can do along, like to kind of unlock him, or he's like drafted or something like that?
Yeah, so there's actually both. At the beginning of the event, you have a draft picks. I think it's going to be between 6 and 10 draft picks, and you write those down. Everybody hands those in, and then we'll go through them, and you know, give people whatever named uniques that they managed to draft in that quick draft at the beginning of the game, at the beginning of the narrative. But also during the narrative, what happens is your generic pilots, if they survive a mission, if they you know, spend more than I think 2 rounds on the map. You can't just like fly them off the board on turn one and get this bonus. But if they survive and participate in the mission nominally, then they actually become veterans. What that means for them is you're allowed to increase their pilot skill by one for free. And if they survive participate in and survive a subsequent mission, then you can actually replace them with one of the uniques that has not been drafted already. So if you have like a rookie pilot who survives a mission, he could fly the next mission at pilot skill 3. And then if he survives that one too, you can replace him with Wedge Antilles or, you know, Hobby or any available X-Wing pilot at that point. And
like hobby with targeting astromech, baby.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And the flip side of this coin is that if you lose a unique pilot during a mission, they're gone forever, and you remove them from your roster, and you get back the original generic pilot that they had replaced. And that replacement mechanic works for the draft at the beginning of the narrative too. So in order to like draft Wedge, you need to have a non-unique X-wing in your roster.
So are there any restrictions as to what waves are available for Rebel? So I'm assuming this is only a Rebel and Imperial.
So the two teams are Rebel and Imperial, but Scum can work for either side. I think we're saying that the Rebels have Scum and the Imperials have the Villainy. But you can work, you know, Scum can work for either side. Doesn't mean too much.
Okay, cool. And there's no so the only restriction is that you need to start with generics.
Right. There are some other restrictions in there. There's also a short list of banned cards. Some of those are banned for thematic reasons. For example, Luke Skywalker is banned for thematic reasons. Most of the other A-list celebrities of the Star Wars universe are banned for thematic reasons, just because it didn't seem thematically appropriate to have like Emperor Palpatine out there guarding a munitions depot. Like one of the missions is the rebels are attacking a munitions depot. So why is the Emperor at a munitions depot? I couldn't think of a good reason.
I had to get my attack, guns.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Palpatine is out. Darth Vader is out. Han Solo is out. There's those thematic bans. There's also thematic bans on all of the Episode 7 era ships, with the kind of exception of the quad jumper, because I think that quad jumpers would exist in, you know, Empire, the time of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm not off base there, right?
No, I think it's an older ship, so
yeah.
it makes sense.
Checks out. Okay. But there's no like Upsilon class shuttle. There's no TIE FO. There's no T-70.
Okay.
And that's just a totally thematic decision. There's a couple of ships and cards that are banned for balance reasons also. Twin Laser Turret was one of the first ones that I decided to ban.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to ban it if they could? But the problem with Twin Laser Turret is twofold. First of all, it's extremely powerful on a generic ship, and it sort of scares out all the other fish. If I didn't ban Twin Laser Turret, I would expect to see Rebel lists that were, you know, practically exclusively Twin Laser Turret Y-Wings, because it just makes all the sense in the world to bring a Twin Laser Turret Y-Wing instead of like a X-Wing.
Right.
And especially in missions, where often in a mission you're required to attack a static piece of terrain, essentially. And it's just very, very easy to do that consistently and put out a ton of damage with something like a Twin Laser Turret. So that was one that had to go. Another one that's a little more innocuous that had to go for scenario balance reasons was seismic torpedoes, because a lot of
I'm gonna erase them off my list right now. Hold on.
Yeah, it's just because a lot of the elements of scenarios rely on obstacles and pieces of terrain that I you know don't want to have to plan for players to be able to take those off the board. It's very difficult to design scenarios around that particular upgrade. Damn you, FFG.
Yeah, way to go.
How dare you. Anyway, and then the only ship that's banned for balance reasons is the TIE Phantom, for reasons of, first of all, it has very, very strong generics. I would fear that the generics would be too strong, but in any case, it's very, very difficult to balance scenarios while keeping the something like the Thai Phantom in mind, because its cloaking ability is very, very powerful in terms of keeping ships alive, and then also throw in advanced cloaking device makes it very, very competent at eliminating, you know, terrain pieces that are targets in a mission. It's just it was a little too far off the deep end for us to balance around, unfortunately.
It makes sense. Makes sense. I get it.
So I think that's the broad strokes in terms of the restrictions, and I think what's going to happen, what I'm really looking forward to is seeing what kind of squads people cook up under those circumstances, because it's very interesting to think about. You know, going into this event, you can try and plan for picking up certain unique pilots. You can do things like take obscure ships and load up your draft picks with those pilots. For example, you know, you could do TIE Punisher and try and get Death Rain and Redline. And I think that would be, you know, you'd have a pretty good chance of getting those uniques. And you might, you know, be able to pick up more uniques that way than a person who is going for a more conventionally powerful unique pilot. There's a few other pilots that are specifically banned, like I think Royal Guard pilots for thematic reasons, and Royal Guard interceptors also. But
because they should be wherever Palpatine is.
Exactly. Yeah, this thematic thing.
Right. So can I give some like possible meta analysis for your event?
Shoot.
Okay. So. Mind you, I don't have all the rules in front of me, so you let me know if I'm breaking a rule as I'm going, okay? So I'm probably looking, if I'm a Rebel player, I'm probably looking at Y-Wings with Ion turrets,
mm-hmm.
just to be able to get that control. I'm looking at the Lothal Rebel VCX just to punch some things in the face, maybe even two of those. I don't even know if I would take fire control system, because there's going to be so many ships on the board, you don't know what you're going to get to shoot next turn. I would take it naked or with some crew that can maybe modify some dice, maybe one of them with Hera crew. You do some K turns all over the place.
Most of the missions fall in the 100 to 120 point range for each side.
Okay, cool. So I'm looking at something like that. I mean, if you're planning on bringing scum, I mean, is a Jumpmaster banned?
You know, I am kind of looking at the Jumpmaster with banny eyes, just because, you know, I'm worried about people building up essentially torpedo boat type builds. Why should I tell me you have a better handle on it? Well,
yeah.
Why
so
should I be worried about the Jumpmaster?
My opinion is, as soon as we get off of here, you should go type in your thing that the Jumpmaster's banned for this event. Honestly, because like me, I know that I can play casual, and you know, thematic things, and that's cool. But I always want to go to win. It's like, all right, we're gonna have fun, but I'm gonna go win.
Yeah.
So if
I always try and build my scenarios so that you can approach it with that attitude and still have it feel like a thematic game at the end of the day. That's always what I'm trying to do.
Right, for sure. And I think with the ability to especially because there's going to be a bunch of generics. And if somebody's taking Y-Wings at PS2 and Rookie Pilots at PS2 and Blue Squadron Veterans at Pilot Skill 2, Academy Pilots, you know, the Academy Pilots, all those PS2s move first, and then I'm going to come in, focus, Atani Mind Link, everybody, and one of them, and then all my other guys are going to target lock and just blow your ships away before you even get to do anything. So I think just that chassis for this event might be a little too good.
Oh. Do you think that the base efficiency of the Jumpmaster is a big problem? Because there are other, you know, there's other pilots out there that I am worried about in terms of the pilot skill matchup. Maybe they don't have the same kind of easy access to a tiny mind link. For example, you know, there's a lot of Imperial pilots that make me worry. The main squad that I tested against in playtesting was Black Squadron with Crackshot.
Right.
I figured that was a pretty good benchmark. I want to go back and playtest a little more using high pilot skill interceptors like Saber Squadron. I want to go back and look at Glaive Defenders because they start at pilot skill 6. You know, that's pretty... And, you know, and the X2 title is, you know, well, it's been kneecapped a bit.
it's still pretty good.
Pretty damn good, especially when you can reliably count on going up against generic pilots. So those things give me worries.
Yeah, so you're saying base efficiency. I personally think that while the Jumpmaster, probably they'll never change the cost, but I think it has 2, maybe even 3 upgrade slots on there that it shouldn't have. So I just think, I don't know, it just seems like, I know I would be tempted if I had the time to play in your event, because for those of you who don't know, I'm going to be casting the North American Championship while this is going on. I'd be taking Jump Masters. I'd see how many Jump Masters can I fit in this, in each one, and, you know, maybe throw in some other stuff for flavor, but that's going to be my that'd be my go-to guy, with being able to block people, barrel rolling all over the place, and just making people sad. And I don't want to, that's not good.
I wouldn't feel great if the top table on this for Grayskull was just squads of Jump Masters all over the place. That would not make me feel great.
Yeah, so I would take a look at, when you're in your testing, I would take a look at a tiny mind link, and I would take a look at Jump Masters.
Yeah, that's
just
a good idea.
See how they fit. And even, you know, if you have some time before then, I can play one through you with you on Vassal.
Yeah,
and see if I could help you break it, you know.
yeah, that's something that I, you know, always try and do in my mission design. It's one of the hallmarks of, I think, good design is to always be trying to break your own mission, because everyone else is going to try and break it. If you can't assume that people are going to approach the mission with some sort of strange attitude that they're going to be tying one hand behind their back, you know, you have to expect that people are going to be competitively minded, right?
Absolutely.
And really, you know, I want people to be competitively minded. I want people to look at this and say, how can I win this event? And at the same time, I want them to feel like they're playing something that belongs in the Star Wars universe at the same time, and feel like it's Star Wars at the same time. I think that's, you know, that's like the holy grail of mission design to me, because you can do both at the same time.
Yeah, that'd be great. So one more time, let's flip around, just kind of repeat some information just in case people have forgotten, right? So this event's happening on the Saturday of Gen Con. The date on that is... looking up numbers.
I believe that's Saturday the 19th.
There you go, Saturday the 19th. I'm looking right now. There are currently still some spots available. Mm-hmm. So I would jump on that soon, because I know that, you know, us here at the Gold Squadron Podcast, we're going to be, you know, helping these guys out. We're transmitting this to all of our all of the people who listen. I think you guys are going to do an interview, if you haven't already, with the Minox.
Yep.
And I don't know who else you're going to hit up, but
we're going to be on Scum and Villainy also.
So. There you go. Bother them.
Yeah. There's 40 slots total for the event, and we've sold 24 seats.
Yeah, there's only 16 left.
Yeah. So, and that's at the time of recording. Who knows? I don't know how fast you publish, but
this one will be probably out next Monday, because I'm actually dropping a couple other things before that. But
So, you know, you may not have a ton of time, because I know Minox will drop before that. So there might be some interest. Oh, who knows? But anyway, I'm happy with 24 people. If no one else signed up for this, I would feel like this is, you know, if 24 people show up and play, I'd be very, very happy. we didn't really know exactly how many people were going to sign up for this event in the first place, and really excited to be doing this. I've been hearing about narrative events, and I think every time that I heard about a narrative X-Wing event, I always had a niggling little doubt at the back of my mind saying, could I have done better? So I'm going to find out.
Yeah, well, I'll say a couple of things. So here are some common complaints that I've heard about ones that have been held in the past. One of them is train tracks, right? They're saying, like, no matter what happens, it's always ends up being the same. But you've already said, hey, I have a plan. Like, if X happens, like, the outcome of the games will actually affect the final battle. Like, there's Definitely. Something, you know? Yeah. That in and of itself, I think, is amazing to not just run something again that's just on train tracks, and you've taken the time to even just the complexity of creating multiple branches, even if it's just two branches. I know that takes extra work because you have to work on the balance. Like, okay, if X happens, how do we scale? Like you said already, the two final missions. You had to create two totally different final missions that are both interesting. They follow the narrative of what happened in the things that come before it, and they have to be balanced.
Yeah. I'll say I had to make four final missions because the top table in the final round, that'll have the top scoring players from each team, right? It's a 2-on-2. So they'll have the top two. And they'll be fighting, they're literally fighting over Grayskull Base, which is an actual terrain piece, which is prize support for the match. So,
oh, that's awesome.
They'll literally be fighting to see who gets to take it home, which I think is great. When I got the prize that as prize support, that's when I decided that both the Rebel and the Imperial advantage would both lead to a battle at Grayskull, because I really wanted people to be fighting over the thing that they would take home at the end of the day. I thought that would be more interesting than having two different destinations that you could end up.
I love that. I think that is, it's a small thing, but I think just that little extra place that you're literally fighting over what you're gonna physically take home. I love that. That's great.
And everyone else is going to be fighting in the same, geographic location. So Grayskull Base is in the middle of a asteroid cluster in deep space. And everyone else is going to be fighting over the escape routes leading in and out of Grayskull. So they're going to be contributing to the final outcome. Because, while there's that top table where people are, the top players are fighting over Grayskull, throughout the whole event, whenever you finish a mission, you score points for yourself and you score equal points for your team. And the team score gets added up at the end, and whichever team is ahead wins the whole event and gets to take a team prize. So you get, it's, it's not going to be Grayskull Base, but
yeah,
we'll have something.
Not everybody gets the base.
No. Yeah, I wanted to always make players feel like their games mattered. Because I didn't want someone to, be at the bottom, quote, bottom table and feel like they're not really contributing or anything. Your points that you score at that count just the same as the points scored at the top table.
That's great. Like you said, you're letting everybody be a part of the story, which I think is great.
Yeah. And to say, the story is something that I also wanted to pay a lot of attention to in this event. And part of that was making up my own characters rather than using the standard, Luke, Han, Leia, Darth Vader cast that we've all been working with. And part of the reason that I wanted to do that was so I could take liberties with those characters that I essentially invent.
Of course, yeah.
I highly recommend that everyone, regardless of whether you're interested in the event or think you can attend or think you can play, I recommend that everyone look up the audio dramas that we've produced to lay out the backstory for this narrative campaign, because it's actually We only had the idea to do these about halfway through our process, and but they've come out to be really, really incredible, and they're really fun to listen to, and I think they're fun even if you're not invested specifically in this narrative event. We recorded them as using the shuttle crew as a cast, and we had some fans help us out with extra parts. And nice. You know, it follows the rebels who find Grayskull and follows them through their missions and sets up the events that lead to the eventual assault on Grayskull. And I'll say quick spoilers here. So if you're actually gonna go listen to those earmuffs for a second, the main character who is actually, do you care if you get spoiled personally?
Actually, I'm gonna go listen okay. to those this week on my way
Damn
to work.
It.
So
damn it.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if you can earmuffs for yourself. Jeez.
I can here. Put it okay. in the chat. Ready? Set. Go.
Okay. So the main character who's Jack Bolin. He actually, if you listen to the final episode, which will be out by the time this episode comes out, he's captured at the end of episode 4 by the sinister agent Haldon. And during the narrative event, you're actually going to have a chance to rescue Colonel Bolin. And if you do, then he can show up in the final mission as a playable character. So you have that to look forward to. And I think we'll also have some of the other characters from Killjoy Squadron exist as playable characters in that final mission. So that's only if you're, you know, one of the top scoring player rebel players and Imperial players do you get to do that mission. But I think that's a really cool aspect that I was able to do for this event. Okay, so I'm going to bring our friend back in here.
Okay, spoilers are gone.
Okay, spoilers complete.
All right, Phil, you know, I am, man, I'm happy to be casting, guys, but I'm tempted, not going to lie. I Phil's like, come play.
Yeah.
All right,
well,
Phil.
You know, I've made provisions for people to be able to drop in and drop out of this event. So, you know, if you have enough time to play a mission. Right.
Well, I'll be there. So possible. There you go. You gave me the in. So I'll bring some ships with me.
Yeah.
So if everybody, thank you for listening. If you have not listened to the Shuttle Tiderium podcast, make sure you go look that up. Tiderium, I don't know how to spell it, but if you start typing it in kind of wrong, Google will fix it and you'll be fine. That was my biggest issue. I know one of your listeners is, he's one of the guys at our store and one of our patrons. Name is Andy Stockwell. And he was the one that told me about you guys. And
cool.
I couldn't find, I kept typing it in and it took me about 6 or 7 tries. But I think this narrative is going to be great. It sounds like a lot of fun. Phil has put a ton of work into it. Phil, like I said, I'm totally serious. If you want some help with some playtesting,
yeah,
I would definitely help you out. And again, this is going to be at Gen Con, and I look forward to listening to those audio dramas. If you haven't, guys, let's go do that.
I'll give you the links so you can put them in the description. And I'll also say quickly that if you're not able to play this at Gen Con, you know, we're going to be releasing all the material necessary to run this after Gen Con. And I think we're going to try and run a web-based world playthrough of this narrative event after Gen Con. But you won't be able to get Grayskull base
right
if you play on the web.
You know, I will say one thing. My squad has been looking for a while for some type of thematic thing we could do for like a league.
Yeah,
and this sounds like something that might be able to fit into that. So I'm gonna have to share that with Gold Leader.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, guys, thank you for listening. For Phil of the Shuttle Tiderium, he's gonna go take off now. He had to commandeer his shuttle for a little bit. We're gonna we're gonna send him away before he gets in trouble. You know, we don't want J-Bot to wake up. So
no,
let's. Yeah, we don't want that. All right, Phil, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me.
Gold Squadron, out.